Our next subject is about bread. Bread is such a staple food today, and every culture has their own. There's tortillas and pita and naan, focaccia, rye, Wonder Bread, baguettes. Bread is, it's so ubiquitous, and it's hard to imagine it was once a rare commodity, a food for special occasions, maybe. We could only make it with a lot of hard work, husking, hand-pounding wild grass seeds. Archaeologists working in Jordan have now found the burned sort of toaster crumbs of an ancient batch of bread, a primitive pita that predates even the dawn of agriculture. Here to give us the recipe is Amai Arantsa-Otaegi. He's a postdoctoral researcher in archaeobotany. I don't think we've ever used that word before. Archaeobotany at the University of Copenhagen in Denmark, and published a detailed ingredient list of that bread this week in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And she joins us by Skype from Iran. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hello.
Hey. How many crumbs did you find?
Well, we found more than 600, actually, but we only have analyzed like 24, so we still have a lot of work to do in the future.
Why didn't anyone see any crumbs before?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, because as an archaeologist, I think we have always focused on, you know, architecture, pottery, bones, flint, and all these big things, right, that we can see with our naked eyes. And small seeds and food remains have been long ignored. So I think that this paper will help, improving the visibility of these long-ignored remains.
And so once you got hold of the crumbs, you put them under an electron microscope, and we have a photo of that microscopic bread structure on our website at sciencefriday.com/bread. But once you looked at the structure, what did you find?
So when we look at the structures, when we look at the food remains under the microscope, we see two things. We see, on the one hand, we see plant particles, plant tissues, microscopic, very small, that inform us on the ingredients of the food. And then we also see the texture, right? And if you see that image that it's in the website, you will see that it's very porous, right? Very, very similar to bread. So this two things are giving us the ingredients and the food product, like the final product.
So give us the recipe. What are the ingredients in this bread?
Well, it's not easy, actually. It's a multi-seeded or multi-ingredient bread, I would say. So it has some cereals. We know that these people were using wheat, and we're using barley and oat, for example. All of them were wild species that were growing naturally in the area. And then they are using something quite interesting, which are tubers, which are the part of the plant that grows under the ground, like a root. So they were using a plant that grows in lakes, and it's an aquatic plant of the family of papyrus. And they were using these tubers to make a flour with them. So I think it's an exciting thing to see, actually, because tubers have also been ignored in archaeology. So it's good to see this evidence, actually.
Did it take a lot of work to make this bread?
Well, for them, it must have been a really hard work. First, because they had to find the ingredients, especially cereals. We don't really know where they were growing at that time. The tubers, this clabrash tubers, must have been growing quite close to the site. But the cereals, we don't really know. So imagine that they have to find them. They have to walk perhaps tens of kilometers to find them. And then they have to harvest them and then process them, which is, the husking all these wild cereals is a very hard work, actually. The grains are very well protected. It's not like the wheat we have nowadays that is very easily, processed. So the grains are really easily released from the plant. But these wild species were really, really well protected. So it must have been a really hard work for them. And then, of course, they had to make the flour. So grind the cereals, grind the tubers, and then, make dough and bake it. So it must have been quite, some hard work.
I know that we say this is 14,000-year-old bread, and I'm blown away by the fact that there's still parts of it left over that haven't oxidized, or there's, you know, they just haven't disintegrated. But besides that, we know, we think that agriculture, at least farming, came years and years later after this. So you're saying there's a hunter-gatherers who just would go out and find the wild grains growing? They're not... I guess I'm asking, maybe we should move that timeline back to agriculture? And you're saying, no, they were just wild gatherers.
Yeah, they were wild gatherers. Yes, that's something that we know for sure, actually. Mm-hmm. We know that they were not cultivating these cereals at this site. And cultivation comes, like, let's say 2,000 or 3,000 years later. Well, that's for now, you know.
That's what I'm asking. Maybe that timeline is wrong. I mean, you're making a discovery, and maybe, you know, we've heard this numerous times about Neanderthals, all kinds of discoveries. We move the timelines back and forth. I mean, which is the evidence and which is the symptom, you know? So.
Yeah, the thing with the cereals is that when we look at the seeds, we actually are able to see that they're morphologically wild. So we know that they were these wild plants were reproducing by themselves. So that's for sure. And when we look at this site, we also found these wild cereals. So we know that they were not domesticated at all. So that's something that we know. But the question is, like, why they were doing bread and why they were using these cereals and why they were taking all this, you know, work to do bread. So that's a big question that we would like to answer in the future.
Why do you question this? I mean, what is there about? Is it just so labor intensive, you're saying, that you would have to spend so much time making the bread that maybe you should have been hunting something else that might be easier? You're using up a lot of energy for that calories you're getting?
We think so. We think that it must have been easier to, for example, the tubers, we know that they were using these tubers that were at hand, you know, they were very close to site and they are quite easy to process. So we know they were using those. But why were they using the cereals that are really time consuming to process? Yeah. So there are some, you know, researchers that say that products like bread and beer could have been something special, you know, something that you only consume in a specific you know, occasions or, you know, ceremonies or feastings and things like that. So that's something that we would like to explore, you know, because that's a possibility. And I know that, you know, there are some authors, actually some from the States, like Brian Hayden, that suggest this type of, you know, hypothesis. So I think they are actually very happy with our evidence to see that, you know, bread was made before agriculture.
You know, because I'm looking at sciencefriday.com/bread, I'm looking at the photos on our website of what was discovered, and this was a very well laid out oven and processing place there. This wasn't just something haphazard, you know, that they had a rock bowl and a rock. This was not that. This was, so that's what makes me think that this, you know, they used this more than just occasionally.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I mean, the site itself is quite special. If we look at the fireplaces, two of them, they are huge. They are like 1 meter, you know, in diameter, very big, and they have tons of food in there. There were gazelle, there were hares, there were sheep, there were birds, there were all these tubers. Thousands of them, more than 65,000 plant remains that I found. So there was a lot of food in these fireplaces. And the structure itself is not that large. You know, we tried to feed like 15 people inside the structure. And we think like, okay, this was like too much food for 15 people. So we don't really know, but it's an interesting site, and we would like to continue and see what, you know, what the research tell us. Yeah.
You know, some right now you have N equals one sites. Would you be looking for more sites to figure out, you know, gather more data?
Absolutely. I think that's what we need to do. Actually, in this area where we are working, it's a black desert. Imagine like a desert, but with a black carpet of, you know, stones, basalt stones. There is nothing nowadays, but that's very good for us because the preservation of the sites is incredible. There are many sites around this one, and we are actually digging them. So we have another site, which is called Shubeika 6, which also dates to this time period and continues. So it goes into the next 2,000, 3,000 years. So I think this one is going to give us more evidence to confirm our hypothesis.
And the Iranian government's very happy with you working there.
Well, I don't know. I haven't asked them.
We won't tell them that you're there, okay?
Yeah, all right. You better.
Thank you very much for taking time to be with us and staying up so late for us. Amaya Ransoteegi is a postdoctoral researcher in archaeobotany at the University of Copenhagen in Denmark. BJ Lederman composed our theme music. If you missed any part of our program, of course, you can subscribe to our podcast. You can also ask any of your smart speakers to play Science Friday. You can hear Science Friday, 5 days, 7 days a week, if you like. Every day is Science Friday. And, of course, we're active on all social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. If you'd like to send us email, you can send email scifry@sciencefriday.com, and we'd be happy to talk to you. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.